Good news! My new book is almost here. It's called Handbook for the Heartbroken, A Woman's Path from Devastation to Rebirth. And while it doesn't officially come out with Sounds True until May 7th, you can pre-order it now. And when you do, you'll receive up to $500 in additional gifts and resources to support you on your healing journey. I wrote this book because in the four-year span between 2016 and 2020, I experienced serial heartbreaks that rocked every area of my life: health, relationships, finances, career, social status, and even my very identity. Along the way, I experienced firsthand just how dysfunctional our culture's relationship to loss really is. I saw how we live in a heartbreak illiterate world that's obsessed with success, shackled with isolation, and ignorant of how valuable our suffering can be for our growth and evolution, not only as individuals, but as a species. So this book expands the conversation around grief and loss beyond just breakups and bereavement, although we cover those too, to include falls from grace of all kinds, personal, professional, and collective. This includes the end of a relationship or job, death of a loved one, a natural disaster or a war, infertility, abortion, or a financial crisis. Also, when we're going through hard times, we're encouraged at every turn to hurry up and get on with it. But by trying to power through these messier seasons of life, we're denying ourselves the very answers to our healing and growth. Whether you're experiencing hardship right now, or you know that you have past hurts that are holding you back and still need healing, this book will support you. Handbook for the Heartbroken will show you that it's only through fully turning toward your heartbreak with support, courage, and compassion that you can heal. Within the loving pages of this book, you'll have full permission to fall apart and slowly, organically, find your way back to greater wholeness. I'm truly excited to share this with you. You can download your free chapter now and pre-order the book to receive all those bonuses at handbookfortheheartbroken.com. That's handbookfortheheartbroken.com. I also want to add that pre-ordering the book now is the very best way that you can support me as an author and the health of this book when it enters the world in May. It signals to booksellers to stock the book at that time and in turn, make it available to more people who need it. So thank you for your pre-orders, thank you for your support, and I look forward to continuing to deepen together in this important conversation over the coming months.
Hi, I'm Sarah Avon Stover, host of Truth, Love, and Beauty. I'm an author, internal family systems practitioner, and teacher of women's yoga, meditation, and spirituality, who's built a long career since the early 2000s to be exact, in supporting women to cultivate greater psycho-spiritual wholeness and, in turn, to come home to themselves. My dedication to women and to the upliftment of the feminine at large has been a lifelong one. From growing up as the second oldest of four sisters in a Connecticut suburb of New York City, to studying at an Ivy League all-women's college, all the way up to today. And the very things I support women with mirror the struggles that I've had. Things like doubting, pushing, perfecting, hating, and yes, at times, even hurting myself. Yet I've found, and I have a sense that because you're here, you have too, that these very wounds and pain points can become openings for profound healing, growth, and spiritual insight. I created this podcast in service of honoring just this sacred healing journey that we women are on. It was born out of my own desire to hear Dharma talks, which are what the Buddhist tradition calls wisdom teachings, through the distinct lens and voice of the sacred feminine. Here, I'll share these very talks, along with rich conversations with leading thinkers and luminaries about all facets of the feminine spiritual journey. Plus, this podcast highlights three of the core values we must embrace on the feminine path: truth, love, and beauty. values which we all need more of during this tumultuous time in history. I'm so happy you're here. Let's dive in. Hello, all. Welcome back to the podcast, and welcome to those who are joining us for the first time. Here we are on the equinox. Happy equinox. We are welcoming the season of rebirth here in the Northern Hemisphere. And fitting with this, if you have been here before, you'll notice that there's a new name and a new look for this podcast. I had originally named this She Talks when I started the podcast back in 2015. And about a year and a half ago, as I was just transitioning my work in various ways, I also transitioned the podcast to a temporary name, the Sarah Avon Stover Podcast, which was to remain until I reached clarity on what its new expression would be. And that clarity came, and here we are with the Truth, Love, and Beauty Podcast to reflect and celebrate my top three core values and also what I shared in the introduction, just the top three values that reflect the divine feminine in the world. With this refresh, I also have a humble request that if you haven't already, please leave a 5-star rating and review for this podcast on iTunes. I cannot emphasize enough how much that helps me and the continuation of this podcast, from being able to invite high quality guests to supporting other women in finding this. And it only takes a few minutes. And again, like I said, it does a huge amount of benefit. So please take some moments to do that. And I also thank all of you who have left reviews, both in the past and recently. I deeply, deeply appreciate it. And now on to today's conversation. I'm welcoming Miranda McPherson, a true modern-day embodiment of the divine feminine. And Miranda is known for her depth of presence and gift for guiding others into direct experience of the sacred. She shares a holistic approach to spiritual surrender and non-dual realization based on the practice of ego relaxation. Inspired by Sri Ramana Maharshi, A Course in Miracles, extensive study of the world's wisdom traditions, and more recently, the Diamond Approach. Author of The Way of Grace, The Transforming Power of Ego Relaxation, Boundless Meditations on Love, Miranda is also a kirtan musician and singer with two mantra albums, Streams of Grace and The Heart of Being. Miranda brings 3 decades of teaching experience in what truly works to liberate unnecessary suffering and gain traction on the path of awakening. Founder of One Spirit Interfaith Foundation in London, where she trained and ordained over 600 ministers and spiritual counselors, today Miranda leads the Living Grace Global Sangha, leads retreats internationally and online programs through the Shift Network. Unapologetically feminine, joyful, and down-to-earth in her way of being, Miranda is dedicated to loving people all the way back into the freedom and wholeness of our true nature. She lives in the San Francisco Bay Area, and you can learn more about her at mirandamcpherson.com, and her website is in the show notes. So today, Miranda and I have a rich conversation in store for you. We explore everything from just major positive life shifts she's made during the pandemic, key practices that have been sustaining her during this time, what a feminine approach to non-dual spirituality looks and feels like, how she approached menopause, ways that we can better learn to trust and surrender into life, and much more. Miranda's the real deal, and I know you'll receive so much from her wisdom today. Enjoy. Welcome, Miranda.
Yeah, thank you, Sarah. It's great to be here with you.
It's great to have you. And we always start our conversations here with a brief personal check-in. So I'd love for you to share with us where you're joining us from today, and also how you're doing at the levels of body, heart, and mind.
Sorry, the first question, where am I today? I'm at my home in San Rafael, which is Marin County, just north of the Golden Gate Bridge, in the Bay Area. And the second question was?
How you're doing at the levels of body, heart, and mind.
All I'm doing at the levels of body, heart, mind?
Well, how are you doing?
How am I doing? this morning just feeling very awake and grounded, and I've had a lovely morning of my own meditation practice and some movement practice, and so that's my perfect start to the morning. So my body's feeling awake and open, and my heart is grateful for life, this moment, being here. And my mind feels calm and clear.
Great. And another question that I've been starting off these conversations with over the past couple of years, now that we're just at the 2-year mark of the pandemic, is just what are some things, some mindsets, some practices, activities that you feel have been helping you the most throughout these past couple of years? And I know there's been different flavors and different stages of it, but if there are some things that really stand out that have been good resources for you.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I would say, you know, there've been more blessings than challenges in this time of COVID. And so with the big change in my lifestyle being not being on the road, leading retreats in multiple locations, which was, you know, becoming a bit of an imbalanced lifestyle, ironically. What has been great is just to really listen to what regulates me and what helps me just to be balanced. And there are three main things that I have found, you know, walking up my hill, the back of my house, alone in nature. I have not wanted to walk with friends. I've wanted to walk alone. My meditation practice has always been a big refuge. And so being home more gave me an opportunity to drop into that for myself, which was beautiful. And my devotional practice, singing mantras and making music, has been just wonderful.
And I know we'll speak more about that as we get further into our conversation, because that's a great resource for listeners as well. It has been for me. Yeah. So to go deeper into your work, your work focuses on the feminine approach to spiritual surrender and non-duality. And that's not just for women. And I'm wondering if you can first just define for listeners who maybe aren't familiar with it, what is non-duality?
Well, it's really the deep experience and understanding that can be found at the heart of all of the world's great wisdom traditions, usually not in the exoteric religious outer form, but if you go deep enough, all of the mystics within each tradition would report their experiences and speak about reality as being inherently unified. So non-duality is really the experience and the understanding that even though our nature might manifest as distinct bodies, you know, in individual expressions, what we're all made of is ultimately the same substance. Just as waves are unique and individual, and they are rising and falling out of the one ocean, and that each unique individual wave actually is the ocean. So non-duality is that understanding that you and I and everything and everyone is part of and an expression of divine being or true nature or God, whatever is your preferred language. And that even though we might get caught up in stories and hurts and history and troubles, when you really get to the depth of things, the resolution of all of our troubles is coming to know yourself in your purity and your depth and learning to rest there. And so this is ultimately where deep spiritual practice is trying to take us, you know, not to necessarily just trying to resolve our everyday problems, but the real resolution is coming to abide in the unity and the purity and the love that we are, that is no different than the true nature of what you are and what everyone is. And so what's really important about this is that when we really start to experience, I am not separate, and not only am I not separate, but the love that I've been seeking, the peace that I've been seeking, is actually my nature. I am that. Not just intellectually, but when you really experience that, it frees us up immensely from a lot of unnecessary struggle and neurotic fear, and it opens us to actually feel how connected we really are. And what's natural as we experience that is a whole heap more love and appreciation for all other beings. So it seems very esoteric and subtle, it is, but sometimes it's the things that are most subtle that have the most power to change our experience.
And the way that you guide people into experiencing that, you know, that subtle yet profound shift to really rest in our depths is a very feminine way of doing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Much different than I have found in other places. And I'm wondering if you can share with us, what is it about your approach that makes it so different and makes it feminine?
Well, I think for starters, it's profoundly holistic, because when you understand that everything about you, including the things that you trip up on, you know, the storylines, you know, from the past that you're still in the process of working through, or defensive habits and patterns, and we all have them, even though those things are there and they represent places where our consciousness has gotten patterned or fixed or more dense, your actual consciousness and mine, everyone's, itself is divine being. And so when we come from that standing point, it also lends itself to an understanding that therefore the way to return back to more understanding and experience of your wholeness and peace and freedom means we have to drop in and through everything that we find. So most approaches to, you know, spirituality and non-duality tend to be more about just trying to sort of get away from it or trying to detach from it. I'm representing the opposite, you know, to actually drop in and go towards where we find ourselves and to meet it, which means to experientially contact it with our felt sense, with our somatic awareness, with our awareness, and open and soften through whatever material we find. And if we open and soften and allow our experience and we don't judge it and try to fix it and rearrange it, which is what's normally going on, then things start to clarify. You know, tension patterns in the body start to relax and decompress. You know, hurts and painful history gets metabolized, and we come to naturally start to disidentify from relating to ourselves through those filters of the hurts and the history. So it sounds really paradoxical that as we go towards all parts of our experience, the good, the bad, and the ugly, I mean, the beautiful parts, the difficult parts, and we learn how to not judge ourselves or make it bad or good or wrong, to not commentate whether we should be having this experience or should be having that experience. When we just open in and through all parts of our experience, there's this experience of seeing, oh my God, like all parts of me are holy. And some places just got stuck and bound up in these various ways, and they can decompress. So looking at the analogy of the ocean again, you know, often spiritual teachings are presented as, okay, there's ego and there's essence, and they're two distinct things, which experientially they feel very different, right? But if we flip it and we see the egoic parts of our experience that are patterned and bound and defenses is more like the surface of the ocean of your consciousness. And as we learn to go in and down towards that, and we meet it and we do nothing and we feel it and we open to it, right? We keep relaxing in and through, then we gain more access to the depths of our consciousness that aren't bound, where the peace and the stillness and the clarity and the love is as it has always been and will forever be available to us. So what's beautiful about this is it's a come-as-you-are party. It doesn't ask anyone to be perfect, to not have occlusions. You know, we can, it allows us to just be more honest about where we find ourselves and not try and talk a good spiritual game. That doesn't work very well anyway. And most of all, not aggress on ourselves for where we find ourselves. A lot more I could say, but maybe I'll pause for a little bit there.
Yeah, it's such a refreshing approach. And as I'm hearing you speak, I'm just thinking about certain women that I know listen to this podcast, and I just think about examples that they might be facing in their lives. Like one that comes to mind is the war in Ukraine, and maybe a lot of anxiety and fear coming up. And just to have a really practical example of not pushing that away, or not feeling like I should be feeling different than how I'm feeling right now, or I need to fix this, or I need to change this, or there's something wrong with me because I'm so overwhelmed, but rather just relaxing.
I think you're naming it, Sarah, is that, you know, the first place is to refuse to judge yourself for where we find ourselves. So if we start with that premise, what if I refuse to judge myself for my experience? That's just profoundly helpful right off the bat. And that's a choice that we can make, right? That most people don't even realize, oh my God, I can choose to not judge myself, to just refuse to follow the thread of the judgment. I call that dropping the knife.
Yeah.
But I call that dropping the knife, which is inspired by a beautiful story that I read many years ago in one of Hafiz's books, which apparently was a story about the Sufi master of the 14th century, Hafiz, where apparently, and interestingly, it was a woman who asked him a beautiful question, which is, what is the sign of someone who truly knows God? And it said that he took a deep breath and he looked at her very kindly in the eyes and he said, my dear, they have learned to drop the knife. Learn to drop that cruel knife most so often use upon their tender self and that of others. And so that knife is the mechanism of judgment, which is really the primary instrument of the ego. And so a big part of what helps us the most as we begin to engage spiritual work, or we choose to dive deeper in our spiritual work, is to really take that seriously at dropping the knife of judgment about where we are and also about where others are. Because who are we to say where they should be in their evolutionary process? What lessons their soul is working through, and what difficulties they might have gone through with or without the resources to address any of those difficulties? And so that's a practice right there of, okay, I'm feeling heavy-hearted and anxious, very concerned about the situation in Ukraine. So what if we refuse to judge the fact that we feel that way, and instead we put our attention on, you know, just what helps us ground in this moment so that we have some basis of being able to stay present with what we feel, which is really important, because often when we're experiencing difficult emotions like anxiety or anger that are very human and that most of us would be feeling in a situation like this, you know, it's part of our humanity. These strong emotions aren't wrong because they have some basis. Right now, we don't know, you know, whether it's possible for this situation, the war in Ukraine, to de-escalate. You know, it's very concerning. That is a reality in this realm. It is a reality that, you know, a whole country of people is either fighting for their life, just trying to survive in a horrendous, shocking, traumatizing situation. And, you know, so many people are now refugees, and the immense suffering of that. And so if we're feeling sadness or grief about the situation, that isn't wrong. That, in a way, is a beautiful expression of our caring heart, who feels empathy for other human beings going through difficulties. And so when we refuse to judge ourselves, it gives us a place to go, okay, how can I just ground in the present moment? How can I just be here? What supports me to just be with my breath, to be in this moment, so that I can inquire, you know, what's a useful response? And that's an important question, you know, what's true response? We can't really go there if we're judging ourselves for having reactions.
Because then we're actually not really present with ourselves.
Yes, because the judgment has to lift before we can be present with ourselves in this moment. And we have to be present with ourselves in this moment in order to listen to inner wisdom with which to respond, either respond appropriately in our personal situation, like we might want to pay more attention about how much news, you know, is workable for us to take in any given day. I actually think it's important right now to pay attention and stay informed. But at the same time, we have to notice where the balance is when watching too much is causing too much anxiety that, you know, we can't manage very well, when it might be better to go for a walk in nature and just to support a natural rebalancing and use our attention and energy to pray, or considering what organizations we might want to donate to, or so on.
I want to take a short break from our conversation to let you know about an upcoming retreat I'm leading this summer in a very magical region in the south of France. And this retreat is my annual Women's Insight Retreat, and it's the first one that I've offered in a few years since pre-COVID times. And I'm very, very much looking forward to connecting with you in person again in this way. We'll meet from August 29th to September 3rd at a retreat center there called Le Moulin, and it's devoted to meditation and contemplative studies. I've never been there myself, but I have friends, colleagues, and teachers who have, and all that I've heard are rave reviews. I've been wanting to go for many years and feel so grateful that the time has finally come. It's such a beautiful time of year to be there and to be in nature, to swim in the river, to eat delicious food together. There's really nothing like a week-long retreat with other women in a beautiful area of the world to truly reset, realign, recenter, and digest the experiences of life, of which these days there are many. During this week, we'll practice women's meditation, women's yin and slow flow yoga. We'll go for nature walks on our own, have ample time for rest and self-care. We'll journal and reflect. So this year's theme is on change, resilience, and grace. So we'll be exploring those themes together. We'll be doing small group inquiry work using the internal family systems model to gain more insight into and wholeness within our psychological structures. We'll reset our nervous systems by unplugging from technology and spending periods of each day in silence. And all of this will help you to feel deeply connected to yourself, to the world around you, with greater access to your inner knowing and gifts so that you can return to your life and whatever's happening in your life more refreshed, clear, inspired. Plus, this year, to make this retreat more accessible to more women during a time when we need retreats like this more than ever, I'm offering this at the lowest price point ever and also with a sliding scale. And the retreat center, the accommodations are also priced affordably, again, with the intention to make spiritual practice more accessible so that it really can become a regular part of our lives for this lifelong process of evolution and awakening. A negative COVID test is required to attend, and you can learn more about all of this and join us at womensinsightretreat.com. That's womensinsightretreat.com, and the link to that is in the show notes. Now, back to today's conversation. And this dropping in and being able to access our inner wisdom and know what is right to do next. This is an aspect of grace, and just a larger umbrella of your work is grace. And mm-hmm. you have a beautiful book, The Way of Grace. For listeners, I mentioned it just in a recent podcast. Someone asked me what's a book that I've gifted the most in the past year. And it's your audio, the audio version of it. Oh,
lovely. Thank you. I'm glad.
Mm-hmm. And just how soothing, healing, grounding it is to listen to that. And I'm wondering if you could speak to us about grace mm-hmm. and why it's like such a central focus of your teachings.
Yeah. Well, grace is a beautiful word, isn't it? You know, we hear that word and something in our heart goes, you know, because it's speaking to something that, you know, isn't necessarily so easily pinned downable. It's speaking to direct experience of the sacred. That, you know, those moments where we actually feel connected to all that is and one another and nature, where we feel, you know, loving presence pervading our being, where we realize that somehow we are being shepherded through many different kinds of experiences in our human life, and that the overarching agenda seems to be wake up and love, you know. But grace ultimately is a way of being, which is why I called the book The Way of Grace. It's all this is really designed to help us become more graceful human beings, which means to be more grounded in what we really are, right? More connected to our essential qualities and responsive, elegantly responsive, so we can be in this world but grounded in our spiritual depth at the same time, which is, I think, ultimately the goal. And so, yeah, all my teachings are about helping people to relax into that luminous presence, which is at our core, to open to the forces of grace that are always here to help us, to open to the transforming agency that really we cooperate with our spiritual practice and our best efforts. But, you know, when the release comes from fear, from hate, from hurt, from old stories, it happens by grace. But ultimately, you know, it's about helping us to be more graceful in life, you know.
And something that you also talk about is how grace doesn't always come softly and gently.
No, sometimes it's fierce, as we know.
Yeah.
Like the coronavirus pandemic, you know, for example, could be described as a form of fierce grace. I actually, you know, got pretty sick with COVID, so I'm very familiar with the fierce part of it and the difficulties of it. But at the same time, you know, if any of us look to some of the most difficult passages of our life, whether that was through sickness or divorce or some loss or setback, or that at the time felt like a disaster, felt like something going wrong, often in retrospect, we look back at those passages and we can see what was happening was some kind of purification or initiation. And sometimes we need those purifications, or there's a burning away, a burning through, right? And that we emerge and somehow there's more of the real here. Something has been dissolved and there's less of a veil than there was before, or things get forged in those fires. Really important understandings or gifts or capacities get forged in these really difficult passages if we're open to it. And that's really helpful, because I find that it helps me to stay courageous and optimistic and resilient when things are challenging. Like, you know, in our world situation, these are very precarious times. Not only, you know, the challenges of the pandemic and all of the ramifications of that on so many areas of our lives, from our health to how that's affected our friendships, how that's affected our intimate relationships with family and people we live with, how that's affected how we work, you know, how we do things, how we communicate. I mean, it's profound, you know, the personal and the societal impacts of that. And I think, well, in a way, it's forced us to take a closer look at what does and doesn't work now. It's forced us, certainly I'll speak for myself, it's forced a deeper investigation of what are my values, what really matters to me, and is the way I've set my life up congruent with what I say matters most? These are important questions, you know. And also, I think on a collective level, it's pretty obvious to me, given that, you know, climate change is knocking on the door, that not only does their personal evolution and awakening and clarification that needs to happen, but collectively, we need to rise into greater spiritual maturity because the issues that are bearing down on us collectively are going to require more humanity, you know, more of our noble qualities coming forth, more collaboration, more we, less me, right? So that's just what's needed. And perhaps, you know, these fierce conditions are just part of that, as if the mystery of existence is saying, come on, humanity, come on, children of humanity, wake up. It's time. There are things that are more important than your upset about what you did or didn't get, what you have or haven't achieved. There's something more important here. And it's it requires all of us. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
so I'm feeling that very passionately, and a big part of the changes that I've made in the way that I share and teach in the last year, and even what I teach, has been very influenced by this. And I'm feeling this deep impotence, sort of impulse within me. It's quite powerful, that sort of coming through in a stronger way with my students. I'm not so interested in just doing workshops here and there. I'm more interested in people that want to stick around, do the work, come back, help one another, form community, help one another to apply these teachings in their lives and keep coming back. Because, you know, a little reading here and there, a little workshop here and there, it's not enough to cut it.
It's not.
You know? Yeah. It needs to be ongoing, because we all get caught in our ruts. We all need to give and receive support. And we need to help one another.
Yes. So circling back to this, you know, you're talking about these purifying initiations. You write and speak about a particularly potent one. It seems like really pivotal in your life, your journey, in your late 30s. Mm. And that involved a lot of spiritual insight, spiritual awakening, but also real reckoning at the level of your personal and professional life. Mm-hmm. That required a huge amount of courage to face and to trust. And I'm wondering if you could speak to us more about that time and how you made it through that.
Well, I was, it was actually kind of occurred sort of, you know, mid-30s actually, but it went on into my late 30s. So I remember just, you know, I was about 34, 35. And at that point in my life, I'd been married, you know, to my first husband for a good 10 years. And it was a pretty good marriage, you know, for the most part. And, you know, I was director of an interfaith seminary that my teacher had asked me to found in my 20s. And at this point, the seminary was kind of pretty much birthed. It had taken everything I had to get this going, develop the curriculum, get it established, train people, you know, turn it into a non-profit, you know, in England, which is a much more traditional culture, you know, where I think people in America don't quite get it, that in the UK there isn't a separation of church and state. You know, it's an Anglican Church of England state. So there aren't any kind of, you know, alternative ministers or anything. This was the first initiation of such a thing, you know. And yet, like in a lot of places around the world, the majority of people in the population would describe themselves as spiritual but not necessarily religious. So, you know, I created this training program that was based on study of the world's wisdom traditions and particularly their practices in the light of training people to be spiritual counselors and non-denominational interfaith ministers. So I'd given everything I had to that, only I was about 34, 35, and I started to all of a sudden feel a little stale. Like I felt like I wasn't really growing. I was established in my spiritual practice and established in my marriage, established in my career doing very meaningful work. Only inside, I felt like I was living off like 20% of my capacity. And I knew it. And if I had a couple of people I tried to speak to about that, and they just thought I was crazy, you know, because from the outside, it all looked really good. But in my heart of hearts, I knew I feel stale. And I feel like I'm in second gear and I've got at least five gears in me. So that went on for a while. And all I knew was in my meditations, I started to sort of drop into deeper and deeper levels of consciousness that felt like I was disappearing into the void. And it was beautiful and incredibly peaceful. And then I'd pull up and out of it. And that was going on for about a year. And then my former husband and I went to the ashram that was the ashram of Sri Ramana Maharshi in South India. And I'd spent a lot of time in various ashrams in India on multiple trips before, but and I wasn't expecting anything particular to happen, but I was just sort of happy to be in India and take a couple of weeks and be on retreat, do some meditation, have some space for myself. And one day I sat in this cave that was one of two caves that he had lived in for many years before people really came to know him. And by the way, for those that don't know who Ramana Maharshi is, he's a very revered Indian sage who died in 1950. So I wasn't expecting anything big to happen, but something did happen one day when I sat in his cave and I started to settle into meditation. And this experience that I'd been having for a year of dropping into the void happened very quickly. And it felt like whatever I was didn't exist anymore. Whatever the world was, I mean, it felt like Miranda, world, all her concepts of God, and I had a lot, being a minister and all, it all just sort of was absorbed into a great silence, a thunderous silence. And I heard, although it wasn't an I hearing something separate at that time, that this be nothing, do nothing, get nothing, become nothing, seek for nothing, relinquish nothing, be as you are, rest in God. So I don't know how long I was meditating in that cave. All I know was everything was different from that moment. I was in this state of absolute silence for 3 weeks. Not a single thought, no judgment, no commentary. Profoundly peaceful, natural actually. So I got the education from that experience of how things are when the ego is completely settled. All our self-concepts are gone. All our filters aren't there anymore when there's no dust anymore. And so 3 weeks later, the ordinary experience of a personality structure returned, but it didn't have the same potency or power as it had before. And then after that, everything started to change in my life circumstance without me trying to make anything change. Like my marriage all of a sudden felt different. And my husband and I started to drift apart in a pretty foundational way. And it hadn't been because of arguments and discord and big obvious conflicts. It's just something had changed very profoundly. And he was the one that ultimately, you know, called an end to the marriage. And I won't say that that was easy. It wasn't, and there was someone else involved in it. But it was just like all the structures of life that I had built that were holding together the self called Miranda, who was this and this and this. It all just started to come apart. And so when you ask me, you know, well, how did I handle that? Well, really, it was my years of meditation practice that gave me the strength. I would wake up in the middle of the night in a sort of anxiety attack, and I had never had those before. I had never suffered from anxiety in that way. But at the same time, there was that same voice that kind of spoke in the cave saying, "This isn't what it seems. Go meditate." And so that little voice saying, "This isn't what it seems, you know, go meditate," was very, very, very helpful. And so that became my refuge when I would have those kinds of nights, is I would go into my meditation room and I would meditate for hours into the night, enough for my system, my nervous system, to quiet down. And it felt like, oh, I was back in the cave again. I was in that depth of silence, that depth of absorption, where even though big things can be going on in one's personal life and in the outer world, the peace shimmers in a way that's indestructible. And so deep in, you know, that would be my refuge, coming back to that, coming back to that. It took a long time to get established in that depth. So, for example, there were a lot of things that I had to deal with that had to do with handing over the organization and the legal side of that and all of the transference and the feelings that weren't easy, you know, that were going on within the community. There was, you know, going through a divorce, which no matter who you are, it's a brutal process, not easy. There was navigating, you know, knowing that my life in England was done and that it was time to embark on a new life here in the United States. So there's the figuring out how to get legal and how to move to a new country and what's involved in that. Not easy. All these big things going on at the same time. And so what was really obvious was that to try to handle these big things from a consciousness that took itself to be a separate someone was impossibly stressful. So the grace in my situation was, it was completely obvious that the I that I had taken myself to be all these years wasn't capable of all of that. And I knew it. But I also knew that who and what I was so much deeper than that. That was not that structure of personality. So I trained myself to go, okay, what if I rest in being nothing and no one? Allow the quietude to settle and then ask what's needed now. And I learned to live and make practical decisions from that place, not to lead from ordinary mind. It's quite a big training. But it was profound. And what I discovered, and I think that anyone who wants to really take this on will discover too, is that the wisdom that is needed for exactly what life is dishing up for you right now is always here. But first you have to step back from trying to figure it out from the perspective of your ego that is inherently limited. But when you rest in God and dissolve in God, then God is all the wisdom and the clarity and the knowing that is not only just abstract, it's practical. It's the resource, it's the well from which the right response is available. But it's only ever in the now. Right? So we have to stay in the now and then, okay, what's needed now? Right.
Yes, and you're outlining here a lot of really important themes. One of them is trust.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
And another one is surrender.
Mm-hmm.
And like this point of maturity, like this, that I feel like most of us reach around the midlife time, that can be like starting in the mid to late 30s. And not all of us pick up the message, but that it's, if we're not living from thy will rather than my will,
mm-hmm.
that things happen, our lives get shaken up to reset us and to orient us, especially if we're on a spiritual journey, especially if you're a leader in the spiritual journey, and just how disorienting, but also rearranging that can be.
Well, there's no birth without death, you know, and spiritual transformation is, you know, layers and layers of death and rebirth. And when we embrace death as part of life, not just physical death, but the allowing of outworn ways of being, limiting ways of relating to ourselves and others. You know, when we allow things to die that have outlived their usefulness, then, you know, things can be born. We can be reborn at a deeper and more real embodiment of who we are. And so, of course, allowing for death, you know, is surrender. And you can't bargain surrender. You can't say, oh, I'll surrender once I know what's on the other side. No, you have to say, okay, thy will be done. And let go, even though you don't necessarily know what will happen, how it will look, what shape or form that will take. And so going deeper as a human being and spiritually involves the willingness to let go of everything, that's familiar, including the way you know yourself. That is really the quintessence of spiritual evolution. And so that's why trust is so important, because without sufficient trust, we just won't let that happen. So there's a big part of, you know, what I emphasize in my teachings is cultivating trust. And that's an enormous subject that is almost a book in itself. You know, I've said so much about it, written so much about it, but, you know, for very good reason, because, you know, we can't just say, okay, trust. We have to understand our mistrust, you know, and not judge ourselves for our mistrust, but see what's at the root of our mistrust. And it's usually suffering. It's usually, you know, difficult memories and stress in our nervous system from moments when we were vulnerable and dependent on others and needed consistency of love and attuned care. And unless we were raised by enlightened beings, you know, inevitably there were shortcomings. And it often relates also to traumas we've been through, when there have been specific things that we've been through or our ancestors have been through that were extremely overwhelming, and where it didn't feel like the loving support we needed at the time was available to us. There's a freeze and stress in our bodies and our hearts and minds. And so for trust to develop authentically, that has to be seen and understood, and sometimes presenced through with a lot of love and kindness and care, and sometimes the support of someone's guilt. Because the good news, though, is that, you know, mistrust is learned. It's not ontological. We don't come in mistrusting. It's a learned response. So we can get it back by working through those difficulties, and then also by training ourselves to look to, you know, the fact of loving goodness, the fact of holding that is inherent. And I'm always pointing people to nature for that, because you don't have to believe anything. You can go out in nature and you can like meditate in nature and notice the fact that all the plants are compassionately absorbing your carbon dioxide and giving you back clean, life-giving oxygen. And that isn't something you have to earn or deserve, it's just how it is. And that in that natural phenomena, in this beautiful unity, web of life that is the plant and the human kingdom, we see that there's love, there's kindness, there's profound goodness. And the more we take in love and holding and goodness, the more it helps us to relax and be here in a direct and a real way, and to go, oh, it's actually good. I can be here. You know, so this is so much the work in what I call the second dimension of grace, which is about receiving it. It's about letting loving presence in, recognizing that there's a holding presence that's inherent to life. You know, so typically, if we look at this from the lens of the divine feminine, you know, if we look at this across the spectrum of the world's great traditions, we see that often this has been expressed as the divine mother. You know, we see in Buddhism, the Bodhisattva of Tara, this sort of feminine bodhisattva that, you know, is always available to help human beings to, you know, unwind the root of fear and help human beings awaken. You know, we see, you know, Kuan Yin in a similar compassionate, holding, loving, you know, Mary in Christianity. We see Shekhinah in Judaism. You know, we see many faces of the divine feminine in the Hindu tradition that express different ways in which this holding presence of the universe is available to us to help us along our way and help the children of humanity to trust, to let go, to open up, to learn and grow.
And all of this just really points back to the reality that we're living in now as a species, as a planet, with all these existential threats that we're facing and the need to, as you're saying, not just dabble in spiritual practice, not just read a book here and there, or do a workshop here and there, or meditate every once in a while, but to really commit ourselves to grounding, rooting in our depths, and building this relationship with grace.
Yeah, well, and, you know, with ourselves, because the grace that we're connecting to is really ourselves, our own divine true nature that's inseparable from, you know, the loving goodness of reality, whether you want to call that God or by some other name. And that's what gives us a basis to show up differently.
And to trust what's unfolding, even or especially when it's scary,
yeah,
confusing.
Yeah, or crazy making. Yeah. And so I think it's like coming back to just being practical, and I think this is a big part of the feminine approach to awakening, is, you know, making it practical. So really paying attention to what practices serve you, bring you back to this moment, to your own heart, to your own depth, to helping you to trust and helping you to respond rather than react. And to notice what works for you, what best serves you, and to make that part of your life.
Something else that we talk about here is a lot about our cycle, feminine cycles. Mm. So that can be just the cycles of death and rebirth that we've been talking about, and also within the seasons of our own lives as women and bodies. Mm. And something that you've spoken about publicly, so I'm guessing this isn't too private, but feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, is you've spoken about your transition to menopause. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of women listening are experiencing that and just wanting more wisdom and resources about how to navigate that more gracefully, more skillfully. And I'm wondering if there's any aspects of that you would feel comfortable speaking to that you have learned and just incorporated into your life as a result of that, passing over that threshold.
Yeah, I think, I don't think we as women necessarily are so aware of what a big role our hormones are playing in our consciousness until we go through menopause. And all of a sudden, the estrogen declines pretty significantly. And, you know, what I noticed in myself was really interesting. I noticed all of a sudden I'm saying no more. And I was sort of joking with some friends how, you know, and it's a phenomena that I've seen. A lot of women tend to go through divorces around the time they're menopausal. And I was really seeing, oh, I totally understand why that's so. Because the estrogen loss, you know, takes that buffer that's usually so other-oriented biologically away. And so I was noticing that in me, and I'm saying to my husband, no, I don't want to do that. No, that's not what I want. And he was going, why are you becoming such a bitch? And we were joking about it. And I'm like, well, from where I sit, no, I'm not being a bitch. I'm just telling you how I really feel. And the answer isn't, yeah, sure, which it used to be. So just being able to notice and observe that gave me a bit of a sense of humor and capacity to go, that is part of the process that, if we embrace it, can support us to be a lot more real and authentic. But at the same time, you know, I'm one of those women who, you know, was suffering greatly from, you know, really bad sort of, you know, menopausal symptoms. So eventually, after trying everything that was available naturally, I went on to hormone replacement, and was totally the solution for me. But I'm also aware that, you know, there's much more of a learning about how do I best use my energy. There's a sense of just knowing that things change, and that in these years that I'm in my 50s now, to keep asking my body to do what it used to be able to do without such a big deal in one's early 30s is just not wise. And that I realized, oh, up until a few years ago, the way I was relating to my body, what I was expecting my body to be able to handle, was out of touch with how things really were now. So that's been a big learning, to learn how to not push physically, energetically, to hold some energy back for my own well-being, to not always say yes to everyone's need, you know, which I can easily do, but that doesn't ultimately serve, and to be wiser about what I give my time and my energy to, which inevitably means being very clear about what matters to me, what my priorities are, and getting more comfortable with saying, no, I'm sorry, I can't do that. You know, and saying that just cleanly and without energy, just mm-hmm. cleanly, because it's the truth.
Yes. Yeah, those are all big, big lessons, especially for us as women.
Yeah.
And I hear you when you say that it just increases the authenticity.
It can, if we can work with it, right? But at the same time, you know, not be proud about what we might need to be more graceful in that transition, because it's an enormous change in the body. And, you know, I learned that my mother and my sister had an awful time through the menopause. So, you know, there's genetic components. You know, for some women it's harder and for some women it's easier. So I think to not have judgments about what does and doesn't work, but to listen to what works for you.
Yeah. Mm. And right now, what is your current growing edge?
Gosh, good question. I think I was just naming it, of really looking at what is my yes and what is my no, and really being awake to, you know, saying yes consciously and checking in, is this really the best use of my time, energy, and attention? I get asked to do a lot of things, you know, for a lot of people, and it's all good stuff. But given that I need to, you know, manage my own energy budget wisely so as to avoid burnout and to be able to be peaceful and fruitful for as long as I possibly can, I'm very awake to, you know, needing to say no more than I have tended to. So that's a question I stay close to. What is the very best use of my time, energy, and attention today?
It's a great question. And so, Miranda, I know you have just some beautiful creations, and I'd love for you to share with listeners more about those and where they can find them and where they can learn more about you.
Yeah. Well, everything that I have going on is available through my website. My website is quite a portal. It's www.mirandamacpherson.com. And if you go and visit my website, firstly, there's a lot of free videos and things to enjoy. But if you go into the store tab, you will see there is whole courses on meditation. There's various different kinds of meditations, from foundational practices to specific healing meditations, including one on trust. There are two mantra CDs on my album. One I recorded a long time ago that was called The Heart of Being. And just in the last week, I have just released a new mantra album, which right now is only available exclusively from my website. And it's a really high-level production. It's not just a rinky-dink kind of mantra album. There's some world-class musicians who contributed to this. It's really lovely. So that's called Streams of Grace, Mantra Medicine for Yoga and Inner Peace. And I created all these things a long time ago because I know how it is. A lot of people are really busy and they don't have time, or they don't necessarily have the discipline to learn to meditate and really persist with it like I have. So knowing how we all have one of these devices these days, I wanted to create things that people could just download onto their device and hit play when they need to. So on my website, there's so many resources for people. There's self-study courses, there's articles, there's videos, there's so much. And so, and obviously there's my books. There's The Way of Grace, and then there's my previous book, Boundless Love, and there's audio versions of both The Way of Grace and Meditations on Boundless Love, which is its own teaching too. So, and then I give retreats, and starting to very gradually get back to in-person retreats, but I do a lot of online broadcasting as well, and I will continue, regardless of what happens with the pandemic or endemic, wherever we are with it now, I will continue to give what I've called home retreats, which is virtual retreats, because they've been so wonderful and successful, and I'm able to offer them at much lower cost. So yeah, I just encourage people to visit my website, take a good browse around, and download some things that call to you and use them.
And I just attest to what a resource your website is, and your beautiful new mantra album. Just really encourage listeners to have a look, have a listen. And Miranda, you've shared so much with us today. So it's fine if there's nothing further to add, but I wanted to ask you if there's any final words that you want to leave us with today.
I think I've already said them, so I'll just reiterate that, you know, pay attention to what actually supports you to drop the knife of judgment. Stay in your breath and in your body with kindness in the present moment. And what supports you to stay close to your deep knowing, and whatever your answer to those questions are, make that into a practice and make it part of your daily life. And come back to it, engage that practice when you hit fear or stress or overwhelm. Because that practice is your refuge. And we all need a refuge now more than ever.
Thank you so much, Miranda. And thank you for sharing your precious time and energy and wisdom with us today.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here today. If you enjoyed today's episode, I'd be very grateful if you could take a moment to please rate and review this podcast on iTunes. That is the best way to support me in continuing on with this podcast, and also to support other women in finding this, other women who may find this beneficial for their own lives. Also, don't forget to hit subscribe so you don't miss future episodes. And if you're not already signed up for my newsletter, Monthly Insights, which I've been sending out now for almost 20 years, I welcome you to join me and a community of like-hearted women from around the world there. You can subscribe at my website, sarahavonstover.com. Until next time, I'm sending you my heartfelt support.